policeman in Palo Alto. East Palo Alto, I believe, is where it happened. And I'm like, I need you to corroborate it wasn't me you stopped. Yeah. And I was afraid because it had been quite a while. Maybe some months had gone by. I'm like, that's right. I'm thinking, is he going to be able to know it wasn't me that he stopped? Right. And I'm like, because he did right away. You go, you're done. But I went and I'm like, okay, the car you stopped, that was my sister's car. I'm like, okay, I have all these facts. Like, this is not me. I did not do this. But then that was over the first. The second one I happened, I didn't almost go to jail for the book, but I got a call from Neiman Marcus saying, are you something? Ask me some kind of questions. What are you asking me about? They're like, well, you're trying to exchange some stuff. Sort of. Well, obviously, I'm not trying to change stuff about it. I said, oh, that's my brother. That's my sister and her boyfriend. And so, yeah, I would arrest them if I were you. But I said, because she was regularly stealing clothes and returning them to Neiman Marcus and some other stores. I found out there were two stores that I could not buy from. I was on the list that was not allowed in those stores. Neiman Marcus is one, I can't really the other one. But so yeah, I was on your list of not being able to. I was banned from their stores without my awareness knowledge, so I never used them anyways, so it didn't matter. Okay, well, I'm going to take a few minutes here. And we're going to take like the last half hour is going to be, you can fire any questions you want at me. I don't know if I'll have the answer for you or not, but I'll try. But we're going to just kind of finish up my responsibility to a local church. We didn't kind of hit it all, so just kind of pass that on around. And so there are really three sections, and actually some of it I hit today in the sermon, but when I'm a Christian and I'm part of a church, a group of other Christians, part of my responsibility is to grow. I need to keep becoming stronger in my understanding and wisdom and just keep growing. I don't have to grow at pace of other people. I just need to keep growing at my pace, whatever that is. Just keep growing and doing what I can do. I might not be able to do everything, but whatever I can do, chip in. Do that which I can do. So I'm going to read Ephesians 4, 11 to 16 about that. And the question I want you to think about as I read is, how does each of us affect the church? So starting in verse 11, and he gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and teachers to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for building up the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, so that we may no longer be children, tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. Okay. So how does each of us affect the church? Here's what you're telling me. Silence is golden. What are you saying?
We all have like individual strengths. Like we have certain people in the congregation that are really good at like greeting visitors, and we have certain people that are really good at sending out cards, and like everybody kind of has certain strengths that they bring to the congregation. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all have weaknesses too, but like the strengths are kind of what you can focus on to be like, what can I bring to the church?
Good. You can really see that idea expanded on in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, Romans chapter 12, the idea of using whatever strengths you have. Anything else? Isn't this about this verse where it says, when it talks about it compares it to a body, from the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped. With when each part is working properly, makes the whole body grow. Some parts of our body simply connect other parts, right? They keep us all connected. So I don't think, I agree, it is we all can do what we can do, but we also, each of us, can keep each of us connected. You know, think about some of the churches, especially as the church initially grew in Jerusalem. It had like tens of thousands of people. How does a group like that stay connected? You going to know everybody in a group of 10,000?
No.
You won't remember all their names, right? And you're not going to meet them all most of the time. So how do you stay all connected? Somebody's connecting everybody, right? But you always know somebody. It's like when I was in Hawaii, Julie and I, one of the things that a guide said, he was talking about just living in Hawaii, in a small place, small island. You can drive around the whole island of Oahu in one day. And he said, you know, you got to be careful here. Everybody knows somebody, you know. You're like, any place on the island, you're like, you get in trouble, and some family member's going to know it was you. Like they said, something had just happened. Somebody had committed a crime, apparently a bad crime, just a little before we were there. And they put their picture of the person, and he's like, oh, I found him in like 2 hours. Like, oh yeah, that's my auntie's boy. I was like, there's no way to hide. It is one big extended family in Hawaii. Well, that's somewhat good. Some of us hate that. but it's also kind of good to have a family that's so big that everybody's watching out for one another. Helping each other. And that's what the church is supposed to do. Connect. We're supposed to all be connected. Not any one of us is going to necessarily. If you get a group beyond even 30, I think it's the military that has determined that the smallest groups they use, I don't remember the terminology, but the units that they are in, I believe max at like 23, if I remember right. That's what they have determined is really the most that a unit can hold and be a unit. It's too much, if it gets bigger than that, they can't be a single unit. There's going to be factions within it. So that's all they can really manage to be completely close and devoted to each other. About 20 people. So that means the church can see them at 50. You can't be super close to everybody. But hopefully others are really close. Everybody's close to somebody is what we want within the group, within the family, right? Okay, any other thoughts on just kind of growing and doing what we can, doing our part? That's a little bit why Dave and Rich, by the way, kind of mentioned to all of us, to everybody, to kind of notice the people who don't come and if we don't know why they're already missing, or if we do hear they're sick, some of us reach out to them, and connect with them, see how they're doing, see what's happening, keep each other connected. Okay, so helping those caught in sin, Galatians 6:1, which I already read this morning, it says, brothers, if anyone is caught in a transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watching yourself, lest you too be tempted. But how should we respond when we know a brother's caught in sin? And what do I mean by caught? I caught you!
Yeah.
That's not what I mean. It's not what it means.
Having an oak a hard time overcoming it?
They're stuck in it, like a trap. Yeah. It actually is the word for a trap. Like if you put out a trap for an animal, and that animal got caught in that trap, it can't get out. It's caught in it. That's what he's talking about here. Their sin has got them trapped, and they just can't get themselves out of it. We need to help them get out of it. Okay? And we need to do it gently. And he says we need to be careful, because we can get tempted. Tempted how?
Getting dragged down with it.
getting dragged down with them. Maybe like somebody drowning. You know, be careful. If somebody drowning, they can drown you too. That's why they throw them stuff, or they don't want their, like, if you're going out, actually, a lifeguard is going out in, say, the ocean. They have another device. The device isn't for the person who's the lifeguard. The lifeguard doesn't need that device, typically. But that other person might, and it's also to prevent the other person from grabbing them, pulling them down, because even a lifeguard's not going to be able to swim with somebody grabbing them. And so that's to prevent that person from dragging them down. But they want to grab them from behind so that that person can't grab them, because they can drag you down too. So you could get caught up in the same sin. But I think more likely than not, if we see somebody caught up in sin, I think for Christians trying to help somebody else out, the temptation is to feel like, well, it's to not be gentle. It's not help them, but it's just, you're just there criticizing. You're there to just, you're just pounding on them and making it worse. And so you become kind of a pride that I'm not caught in that sin, and you are, can become a real problem for somebody who's trying to help another. There's a lot of ways, but yeah, we have to be careful. When we're helping people, we can cause ourselves to get in a mess as well. We have to be careful.
So how do you differentiate between easing up on them or giving them tough love? Is there like a fine line, or does it depend on the person?
Well, notice he said here, you need to be gentle. Gentle doesn't mean it can't be firm, but it's still, there's still gentleness to it. It's an understanding that they're caught. I think one of the things is the concept of tough love is I'm not like rejoicing and glad that I'm cutting you off and you can't be hard discipline, but it's like it's a bit more of like, this is necessary. I'm sorry if necessary, and I understand, you know, it's compassion. It's having compassion, care, gentleness, but firmness. That's part of it. I think that's the part of tough love that is sometimes, when people came up with the concept of tough love, it kind of reminds me of it.
Harsh.
Sometimes it was harsh.
Yeah.
No, you didn't mean harsh. Tough can mean a strict standard. God has a strict standard. This is okay, this isn't. But I can still be gentle about it. I can still have compassion for you. And why I said pride becomes a big problem, sometimes when we look at other people caught in sin, very often the sin that somebody else is caught up in is not the sin I would be caught up in. It's not like, it's like a sin that just doesn't attract me, maybe. And so what do we sometimes think about the sins of other people?
Well, that's silly. How could you do that?
Yeah. I was thinking, sometimes we think they're worse. Well, the sins I'm caught in, yeah, I can understand now. The sins you're caught in look terrible. But we do. I can't understand how you get caught up in that. Because we're not tempted by it. But somebody else is. And so that's where that attitude, it's all about the attitude. He's not talking about not being hurt. Because notice, he's saying, you got to help them get out of it. That's the tough part of it. Yeah, you got to stop. But I don't have to be mean to you. I don't have to hate you. I don't have to be harsh to you to say that or to help. In fact, if I am harsh and if I am hateful, how likely is that person to receive my help?
If anything, it's going to just make it worse.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're going to have retaliation.
You put your hand up to talk or just stretching? Okay. I was hoping we wanted to talk.
I think it depends on the person too. Mm-hmm. Like if he was harsh at me, I'd be like, oh my gosh, okay. You know what I mean? But like if someone else were to be like, you know, if something like that were to come from a person like him, mm-hmm. like it would probably have some type of effect on me though.
Yeah, if it comes from your buddy who's harsh, you just kind of...
I can't see them mad. Can't. I'm sure she can. I can see him. He's a lot like my dad. My dad, you've met my dad.
man is mean when he's mad. He is, but...
Most people are mean when they're mad.
Yeah, but he's tiny, kind of looks like...
Yeah.
Shaggy.
Just a matter of how often people get mad.
But, you know, someone of that stature to get harsh, I think it can also have a positive effect. More so than being gentle all the time. Mm-hmm. Because I think if there's a healthy balance between... Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and understand, I don't think he's saying the spirit of gentleness. He's talking about the attitude that you have of being gentle.
Okay.
He's not talking about not being tough.
Well, I think it also depends on not what kind of sin it is, but how entrenched someone is. If it's in the very beginning, you're like, this is dangerous. You should not go down this path. Whereas we're already down that path. They're halfway, they're waist deep in it. Then you need to be like, this is a hard stop. We need to know. Mm-hmm.
Well, in fact, this concept of being caught in it implies that this is a sin that they can't just go, oh, I shouldn't have done that.
Right.
But this is a sin that they're more addicted to, in a sense, that they just can't stop. But that's the implication of what words are used here. And yeah, you know, what do you do? When people are addicted to certain behaviors, you can't do them. Again, it's like, you know, you gotta stop, and it can't be anymore. Now, will people relapse? Oftentimes, will, but then it's right back to okay. So you gotta stop. It's gotta be a complete, and there has to be a severing, a distance between. Even the people you did those things with cannot be in your life anymore.
See, that's how I meant, because I reverted back to my addiction history, mm-hmm. So. And rather than say, oh, I hope I never do that again, I'm very realistic. I know I will relapse again. It's just a matter of time. And that's when I think that's when you guys need to come around and be like, knock it off.
Right.
Yeah, you've got my phone number.
Yeah.
No, and you're absolutely right. Because most, and it has to do with, like, my sister who had, that I mentioned in the lesson, she had a heroin problem from teenage years on. And... Now, she got clean in Minnesota, but every time she was clean in Minnesota for a while, she'd want to move home to California. And it wasn't very, she was not home very long before somebody showed up who was an old friend, an old user with, or an old pusher. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just didn't take very much time, and she relapsed. Now, she eventually stayed clean in California, by cutting all of those people out completely. But she relapsed a number of times before she got clean. But that is what sin can do to us. It isn't just addictions. Some of us can get addicted to sin that there's not a 10 or 12 step program for. Okay? Just think about it. We think sins that we don't consider. What are sins you would consider not as bad?
Gossiping. But that's a really hard one to stop, because it can take a lot of different forms. There's a lot of excuses for it.
That's right. What do Proverbs say gossip is like?
Fire.
You can't do that.
Or is that the tongue?
Tongue start fire. But gossip and tasty. It's like a chocolate. It's a tasty trifle. It tastes so good. That's what gossip is. It is. It's hard. And people who enjoy it, hard to not do.
Okay, I have a question. I don't know when it's gossiping or just confiding.
If you're talking to someone about your own stuff, you're not gossiping. You're not gossiping when you're talking about yourself.
No.
I think it's the intention behind
it.
What
are you
talking
about?
Somebody.
I know, but what if it's to like a family member?
Are
you know
doing
what
it
I mean?
To help someone?
Okay. Here's what I use. If I am talking to somebody else about somebody else.
Like that someone else is just
if I'm doing this for anything other than we are trying to figure out how to help, then I'm gossiping. That's my standard I use. I don't talk to other people about other people's stuff unless what I'm talking about is leading to an actual
outcome.
We're doing something to help somebody. Now, that's just kind of trying to take all the principles of gossiping that are in the scriptures and go, okay, I don't talk about other people's stuff to other people.
Yeah.
Unless there is a purpose. Unless there is a reason that can help.
Like it's driving me crazy. Well, because I want to say, because my aunt said I was gossiping, and I was like, I'm not really gossiping because I'm trying to seek advice from this other lady.
Well, here's a good suggestion on advice.
Like what to do.
When
about
I have
this
asked
person.
For advice, and this actually is a preacher who gave to me a long time, it's Brandon Christian. He goes, I want advice about a situation. He's like, okay, don't tell me anybody's names. So just tell me a situation. There's somebody you know. This has happened. What should I do? Now you're not gossiping. It's not about, now, I don't mean.
But both parties knew the same person.
Well, the problem could be that you might be telling the situation they're going to know. But when you're looking for advice, you don't have to mention the specific people. If that's what you're really doing.
Okay.
But sometimes you might need that person's help to deal with it. Kind of like scriptures would talk about. If somebody's, you know, is sinning and like they sin against you, you try to go to them, you see them sinning, you try to help them. What if you can't help them by yourself? Well, you take somebody else, and now you go try to help them. Maybe a couple of them go.
Yeah.
You know, and that's advantageous. So if you're doing that, again, but it has to do with the purpose you're talking about. Are you just talking about it because it's interesting? Boy, did you hear about so-and-so? Then that, no, really. Great thing. So, I've had some of these conversations recently. Having some family issues back in California. My mom's kind of she has to be taken care of now. Her memory isn't good enough to provide care for herself, so she's got to be cared for. But my brother lives in a house with her. It's not the greatest of situations all around. And so we were having some pretty blunt conversations recently, my brother and I, about my brother and sister, and going, their mom's in this situation, but he's kind of relying on her, and she's paying all her bills for her, and it's kind of a tangled little situation that's going to be messy. And it's like, well, who has authority to do what? And it's all legal stuff, and I think he has a problem. Well, we know he has a problem. My younger brother had a drug problem as well. So the worry is that is if he's using, that could be why certain money is disappearing. Or he doesn't have money he should have. We got to be really careful that. So we're having those conversations, and they're not always about people who are in front of us, but all of us are talking about a family situation that we all have to deal with, right? So if I was just kind of, I don't. Even if I was talking to my brother, it's like, oh, our other brother did.
He's like, well, that sounds familiar.
Gossip is just because if you're doing it just because it feels good to talk about it, is one is different than I need advice.
Okay.
I need to find help, or I need to get them help. So it goes down to, I think, the motivation. What are you trying to do? And I think even in that, I've found myself probably, after the fact, realizing, oh, I might have gossiped there. You know, I didn't. It wasn't my intention, but I probably did. Mm-hmm. I have found myself doing that, kind of thinking after the fact. There really wasn't any purpose in talking about that. And so, okay. Helping those people caught in sin. So we're not going to read the passage here. 2 Thessalonians, But 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 talks about having to disfellowship, having to remove your fellowship from somebody who won't stop sinning. In fact, the analogy that's used in the passage is they are out of step, and the words used are military. You know, military has to march, and does it matter which foot you go with? Yeah, it's left.
Yes.
Everybody left. Everybody right. Right? Can one of them be like Gomer Pyle, and while everybody's taking a left, you're taking a right? No. Out of step. Now, Gomer Pyle is trying to get in touch with it. He just can't. He's bad at it. Ever saw Gomer Pyle? He's a Marine, and he can't march. Gets in trouble all the time. That's not what the passage is talking about. The passage is actually talking about somebody who, everybody's supposed to take a left. and they go with their step with their right on purpose. They won't march with everybody else. They won't fall in line. They won't do what's asked of them. They won't follow the instructions of the commander.
That willful child you were talking
yes,
about.
Yes, that willful one. That is, that, sometimes those willful children are weird because they don't think. It's like, okay, they're not thinking I have to do this, but if you tell them, you can't do that, they're going, well, I'm doing that then. And it's, it's just like, you tell them, no, this is white. No, this is black with white all around it. That's what they want to, they hate being told and following and being obedient. So they have a difficult time with that because they don't, they want to do their own thing. And so the, sometimes that person in a church, you go, okay, you're just not a part of this anymore. You won't conform to what God has told us. You can't be a part of this. So we got, you know, just fellowship. But what's the goal of that? I think there are times, and I've seen it throughout time in churches where it just seems like people are just so mad at somebody who's sinning and won't stop sinning, and it's just like they're just like punishing them. They're just cutting them off. But in a passage, he tells us our goal is to get them to change.
Say, that's like the last step there, that whole cutting off thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It shouldn't be like, cut you off.
Right. But even cutting off, even in cutting off, even when you cut them off, they're your brother in Christ. And you want them to come back. You are basically hoping for any opportunity to be able to talk with them again, that they would come back. But that's not how a lot of discipline happens. A lot of discipline happens. They're mad, angry, harsh. You're out. Like I even have a friend, a guy a little bit older than me that had fallen away and really became a pretty bad guy for quite a while in Arizona. When he returned, his family, and specifically his fleshly family, who were all Christians, just couldn't accept him anymore, even after he repented. So he joined our congregation in part because he couldn't join where they were, which is where he'd grown up, because they wouldn't accept him even after he repented and returned. There was just too much ill will. They couldn't forgive. That's not a positive thing for them, for his family. That's a really, we ought to be able to forgive. We need to find that place, if people are repenting, to come and be able to hug them and embrace them, that we can accept them back. If God can, we need to. You know, and so yeah, it's the attitude with which, even when we get to that point of cutting them off, the last step, our attitude, even in that, is we hope we get an opportunity to bring you back, that you'll be a part of us again. The attitude, I think, is so important in the way in doing these things. Okay, giving to God. I'm not going to read all these passages. How does God see a gift to help a brother in need? So I'm not going to read all the passages. Let's see if you know the answers. How does God look at you give somebody a need and you give a gift to them? How does God see that from you?
Good job.
Huh? Good job. Yeah. That's true.
Yes.
He kind of sees that as an offering. Almost like you had made an offering to God. He's like, you did that for me. That's part of what we do for him. He says, I will repay. I will repay you, even if they can't. What example should we follow to pay workers of the church? What was the example given? You know the example given to pay workers? All workers, by the way. Sometimes churches today are, often be small. They go, only really pay a preacher, but apostles didn't work. We see them on a daily basis out teaching. They weren't keeping a job. They were getting paid. A lot of the prophets were getting paid. People who are preaching getting paid, elders are getting paid. People who take on a full work or even a part work in a church, what's the principle about paying them? Do you know? This is not one people know very offhand. The passage alludes to the Old Testament, the way they paid the priests. How did the priests get paid? Just in general, they say the tithe. The tithes were not given to the priests by the people. The people gave tithes to God in the Old Testament, And God said, I'm giving them to you as your portion. So really, he said, it really is from all of our contributions we give to the church to pay workers in the church. All the workers in the church. We often limit that today, because it's kind of a separate thing. But that's the principle. Old Testament example is the principle he's telling us. As well as, you don't muzzle the ox while it treads out. The grain is also given for the elders, paying them double honor. Okay, should we expect anyone to work for free? In 1 Timothy 5, he's talking about, a laborer is worthy of his wages. Should we ever expect somebody to work for free for us?
Yes.
Yes? Why?
If they're really caring and giving.
If they're caring and giving, they'll work for free? What if I'm really caring and giving? Maybe I'll pay them double. In fact, I remember a Christian tell me he worked on cars. He goes, this whole thing about if you really cared and you're really, a good brother or sister, you'd charge me a lot less than pay for my car. He goes, it never works the other way when I didn't have a lot of money, that you would pay me double because I was your brother and kind of hurting. It didn't work out the other way. Because we all tend to be a little self-centered and selfish. But the laborer is worthy of his wages. In fact, that passage is kind of geared towards having been an employer of employees when I was young, before I was a preacher. I took this passage really to heart. It also says an appropriate wage. Sometimes you can sometimes abuse people by getting them at a wage they will accept, even though you know the job's probably worth more. That's what a lot of companies do. It's a very common thing to do. It's not a godly thing to do. He says, you ought to pay what's appropriate to workers. If you are in a position to be that person who's paying the employer. How should the church respond when saints are in need?
Help them out.
Help them out. That's right. Take up contributions. Say, hey, brother in need, let's pull together. Now, is there somebody who could be in need on a regular basis that we would regularly support, regularly help? That's not wages, because they're not working. It's just a total gift, but we do it every month, every week, every whatever. The answer is yes.
We were doing it for David Ross for a while.
Well, he's working though. We were supporting
but he
work.
I wasn't sure if that's what you were talking about.
No,
he wasn't
I'm talking
working
about
for
somebody
us,
who's
so
actually like, not working for it. They're not doing anything to earn it. They're simply, we're giving it to them, but we're giving it to them on a regular basis.
For benevolence or?
Yeah, just strictly they don't have enough and we're going to give them something every month. What is true and pure religion?
Helping orphan widows.
Okay. How often is a widow going to get better from her widowhood? I mean, an older widow who can't work. How often is she going to get better from her widowhood so that she doesn't need help anymore?
At least
0%. And that's why he actually says when they're younger to get married. And it was actually a Roman law, I found out. They required widows to get married again. But when they're older, they're not getting married again. And they're not going to go to work at 70, 75 years old. My mom's 89 now. She can't work. There's no way she could work. She can't care for herself even completely. Let's say we had somebody like that in our group that doesn't have enough money to provide for herself on a monthly basis. What are we going to do?
But I think take care of them in a sense that doesn't just mean giving them money. It means someone would help them, whether that's with cleaning, with groceries, probably money.
It could be a lot of those things, but it could certainly be money. And in fact, we could do that with any widow, but there are some widows who actually become part of the payment. That's actually what 1 Timothy 5 is about. Widows, true widows indeed, who actually have met certain qualifications of having done and practiced life a certain way, they can actually become, their name can be put on the roll so that they get a monthly stipend for them as well. That's actually the very first benevolence in the book of Acts was mostly helping widows that didn't have food. There was a daily distribution of food for those who needed it. And it was mostly for widows. It says, God said, the people who are in need and can't provide for themselves, widows and orphans especially, but that could be anybody who can't provide for themselves, are we going to sometimes, yeah, we're going to provide a lot of activity. We're going to go clean, we're going to go help, we're going to go do stuff. But sometimes at a certain point, it's still going to come down to some money. Isn't it? Are we all going to go, hey, I'm going to go ahead, we're all as a group going to say, hey, I'm going to take $25 out a week, or we're all going to take a little bit, we're going to commit it to that person, right? That's the kind of thing that churches need to do, provide for one another. That's what families do for each other, don't we? Okay, now, sorry, I only left you 15 minutes, but any questions you have? Not about this, anything in the world? Any question that you have at all? That you would like me to try off the cuff, try to come up with an answer for. You can even try to stump me if you want. If you want to make it fight. For you, probably not for me. Just don't be surprised if my answer is Deuteronomy 29. Anybody?
We were
going to
talk about Christmas.
Yeah.
Last week.
Okay. That was one.
That didn't end well on Facebook.
On Facebook?
It didn't end well. I don't think she wants to talk to
you
anymore.
Yeah. That's what I'm getting off Facebook. Well, we weren't the only class talking about Christmas. They apparently, Mendel ruined Christmas last week. And then at the very end
he saved it.
Okay. So it's a hashtag.
I was wondering what
Mendel
that
saved Christmas
was. I saw that, and that's all I saw from...
Mendel saved
Christmas. Mendel saves Christmas. And I was like, what is that?
Well, they spent like three-quarters of the class saying why you shouldn't participate, and then gave them some freedom to do it in the last, like, 15 minutes.
Oh, good. Okay. It's just funny, because I remember his
but
waking me up.
Christmas,
thank you very much.
Yeah. So Christmas, I don't remember the exact date. Now, here's an odd little side note for full-time police forces. The first full-time police force was in a community, I think in America. Was in a community that was going to guard the 12 days of Christmas. They hired them to be full 24 hours a day guarding the 12 days of Christmas because it was riots occurred during it. It was dangerous. The behavior during Christmas time, this predates the 20th century, was such that people hired a full-time police force for that period. It's the very first full-time police force that's separate from an army. Because most countries, who policed in most countries, historically, it was the army. And in America, the army doesn't really have authority in the states, but we didn't have police forces either, full-time police forces, on a regular basis. They're actually a fairly recent, maybe 1800s, I remember, I think it's like 1700, 1800s, the first police force that was hired, and it was around Christmas because of it was so...
Merry.
They were so merry. Yes. But 20th century American Christmas is very different from Christmas. In fact, there's a recent movie, The Man Who Invented Christmas, about Scrooge. Charles Dickens, who writes Scrooge. Charles Dickens. But his concept of Christmas is something that's kind of been adopted, but wasn't really the ancient one. It really wasn't the common concept of Christmas and giving all the gifts. You know, why the tree? Why a tree? You know where that tradition comes from? The Yule log, the Yule log, the tree is, Germany. If you ever hear of a Christmas tree, it's a Tannenbaum, which is a German word for the tree, and it predates even the observance of Christmas, bringing in a tree that would live. Why did they use an evergreen?
Well, they used to use firs. Mingle was telling us about it. They used to use firs, and then, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was like a big bushy tree. And then they were like, that is stupid. They're like, we should use evergreens or pines because they point to God. And it is an image of the Trinity because they're in a triangle.
But it predates, the tree predated a Christian version. It was bringing in a lot, kind of a live tree when the same things were dying outside in winter. And there was kind of the concept of trying to keep life going.
We failed at that. Our tree died.
Our tree died, yeah.
Even the evergreen, it was gone.
Yeah. It was no longer green.
But yeah. It goes back to Germanic pagan rituals, the tree. Yeah, when you learn all the rituals about these Christian things, like even Easter, the bunny, the eggs, all those things, they don't have anything to do with Christ or Christianity. But Christmas, I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but the earliest kind of known Christmas, I think, goes into like the 5th or 6th century.
So he stumped you then.
Yeah.
I
do not remember that off the top of my head, when Christmas kind of started. But it's changed so much throughout all the years. And what was being done before, just in a different name. Mm-hmm. Saturnalia. You ever heard that? Mm-hmm. Nays heard it from the Big Bang Theory. They used it there because actually...
I also heard it because I went to a classical Christian school and learned all about it.
Saturnalia.
Big Bang.
Saturnalia is the... it was the celebration that Christians adopted into Christmas. They said, no, we're going to celebrate the birth of Christ rather than what you're celebrating.
Rather than you pagans.
Yes.
What you do.
Easter is the same thing. It was... They took rituals that the pagans were doing and they just put a Christian label on it. Any other questions?
What?
Kids really loud.
I don't know if that's that. That sounds like Italy.
So at 2:30 today, I'm going to do a lesson. Just for those who, if you don't make it, I want you to be looking for invitation to a Facebook group that will be titled Mindel's Minions. Mindel and I are basically putting a group together to help one another out in talking to people about Jesus. So it's the Facebook closed group will be places where you can post questions. You know, hey, how should I talk about this? Got this, you know, friend. Got this, what's the stuff I can say? And then we're going to have kind of a meeting every other month, basically discuss how we can talk to people. You know, what kind of studies can we, ask questions of each other. We're just going to try and help each other, remind each other about some of the goals, about some of the steps of just trying to, over the next month or, next couple of months, find somebody to talk to about Jesus. That's the purpose of the group. And everybody in the church will get if you're connected to Facebook, you'll get an invitation. Mindel might be a little bit late coming if he's sick now. But yes, I wanted to call it Mindel's Minions, and he really liked it, so.
Because 4 just isn't enough.
That'll be the name of it. since Mindel saves Christmas.
Oh, Mindel.
that's not have to worry about duplicating that name anywhere.
Right? I was going to say, it kind of sounds like an elf name.
Hashtag Mingles Minions.
That's not going to be taken.
No, I don't think so. Okay. So, nothing else?
It's awesome.
Anything else? We have about 5 minutes till. Anybody going to be wanting to take the study next week with Rich?
Oh.
That's the
that's
initial,
the first.
First week.
It's 2 pages, so yes.
Yeah.
You
guys are
going to
be joining us or not?
Oh. You might be.
Mendel
has a bad cold.
Is that possible?
Oh, I say it right in front of him.
I think we can share one.
Well, if that clears us from saying I would say it in front of them.
Does that clear? I don't know, because sometimes that's not, I shouldn't, but I do. So that's not a
I'm
good
not sure that, that really does that. But
it's two.
It's two. Good call.
I think it's more of a comment on the weakness in general of men.
Hey, I wasn't talking about me.
Is he the only one? The man cold is not a new thing. I've heard of it before.
Heard of it?
Women. I don't know. That's my wife. Am I a big baby when I'm sick or not? I don't know. So she'd probably tell you better. Maybe Janae could help.
I love how he refuses to answer that question.
From my perspective, I'm not. But
that's, I think, what every man says.
That's probably true.
So I think, too. I don't know what she'd say about it.
I think there's varying degrees of men cold.
Well, we joke in our house.
Is this next week?
My wife doesn't generally get sick.
I don't either.
So our concept is,
I'm going to
like when I got sick in Hawaii, Julie and I were both starting to feel a little sick one day, and I told Janae the next morning, I'm sick. Your mom's not. She told it to go away. She scared it. She says no, and they leave. Okay.
That's not to Chelsea.
When
too.
She actually gets sick, though, that's bad.
They all like secret.
We don't really want to be in the house when she's really sick. So we're glad she rarely gets sick. Every time she's feeling a little sick, she says, no, I can't get sick.
That's how my husband is, too. And I'm just like, I don't think you have a choice.
I don't think.
I say that.
I think she just happens. She's lucky on the, I think she has good genes. I say the same words.
It doesn't work. They don't take it seriously.
I mean, everything that comes down the pike.
Virus just laughs at you.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no fear of me in my immune system.
Your immune system's like the French off the
exactly.
Start throwing insults at it, hoping it'll go away.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, coming in. Does that work for our dear Heavenly Father? We thank you so much for this day. We thank you for the blessings of your Son. We thank you for the purpose and plan you have for us. Help us to truly live up to caring for one another, helping others when their burdens are too great, to do good for those of our family and God, as well as our neighbors and acquaintances and the people we work with. Help us to be good stewards of all the plans and purposes you have created for us. Help us to know that you are with us all the time, to be confident and trustworthy of that. We thank you, Father, for all the revelations you've given to us to understand your truth and what you've done for us. Help us to love one another and care for one another as you have asked. We pray these things in your Son's name. Amen.